Kennedy's, President Franklin, Delano Roosevelt, addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
It's another Sunday fun day here in San Diego, Higherside Chatters. Welcome and thank you for attending the Church of Carlwood. If you're sick of sacrificing yourself every morning on the altar of abysmal self-image and piss-poor health like I am, then today's a good day to be tuning into THC. We're going to get a serious lesson in modern-day nutrition from James Colquhoun, the director and producer of the great documentaries Food Matters and Hungry for Change. But first, I'm here to shoot the shit with my good friend and occasional co-host Kyle Prineville. Kyle, what's happening?
How are you, Greg? I'm doing great.
Fresh off your second installment of The Capitalism Critique. Very good stuff in there, man. Do you feel like you've covered it all at this point? Is there going to be a third?
I'm not going to do three consecutive. I feel good about the second one particularly. I feel like that one really solidified a lot of my points. But I just wanted to open it up, you know, because there's been a lot of guests. I think even Jake wrote in one of his blog posts that, you know, he's generally just a fan of capitalism. And I mean, not that that's a fault to anybody, but to really take capitalism as a system compared to other systems, I feel like it's not a very good one.
Agreed. It's just sad we don't see more options.
There's a really good interview bit. Maybe we can put a link to it in this episode or something like that, but it's a speech by a little talk by David Graeber, who's a prominent anarchist, one of the guys who started Occupy Wall Street. And he said that all the arguments of capitalism in the past about the high tide rises even the small boats, and, you know, if we all start doing good, the economy becomes a trend and now everybody's doing well. Supposedly, those are all myths. That was all proven false. And now the only thing that they argue is there is no other option besides capitalism, which I think is ridiculous as well.
100% agree. When you look at something like a resource-based economy, it's a little scary because the transition is what everybody gets worried about. It's easy to see the other side and be like, oh yeah, the Venus Project looks awesome, but how do we get there from here? You know, what's going to happen in the day that money stops having value? Will I be able to eat that day? Like, before we get this worked out into a new system? So that's kind of, I think, what scares people.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people fear that the collapse is going to happen before we have the alternatives in place. But capitalism prevents us from even exploring the alternatives. So you kind of have to, as a sovereign person and as a community member, you know, do these little ventures that it's like kind of like mutual support. Everybody gets a piece of it. Everybody chips in on it. Money is involved as little as possible. And, like, there's little communities that have alternative currencies, and I think this is a very cool idea. Could be a big thing in the future, like the hour exchange or some of these different time dollars. And the whole idea of local communities that can actually provide for the local community rather than everybody in the community gives their money eventually to Target or McDonald's or whatever these CEOs are of these enormous corporations, and all the money's all the money you make working constantly slaving away goes out of the community, so everybody in your community just spends themselves poor and disconnected from each other. So we got a lot to change.
Well, it's funny you point that out, because lately I've been really annoyed by the damn Girl Scouts outside of the grocery store where I have to go every day before I go into work. I go to this grocery store, and it's just annoying because I'm super stoned and I'm not putting out a vibe that I want to be talked to. I'm not pleasant. And these kids' parents are standing there, and I have to kind of be like, no, thank you, because otherwise I'm a huge asshole because they're little kids. But it got me thinking about how convenient for the cookie corporation that you can use child labor that you don't have to pay, that are cute little girls, and this whole system is perpetuated that, oh, you can't really say no to these little girls, and these cookies are better than all other cookies. Like, obviously, that's just marketing, but how fortunate for the cookie corporation. And I actually looked it up. A box of Girl Scout cookies is $3.50. Of that, 90 cents goes to the cookie corporation. 65 cents goes to the individual troop. The girls standing there making the physical sales get 65 cents of every $3.50. $1.95 goes to the Girl Scouts of America Council. It's no different than my job. You know, I'm making the physical sales. I don't make enough money to own a home, but I run a $2 million store, you know? It's ridiculous. And I've been undermining my entire district by talking to all the store managers and being like, guys, we run $1 million stores. How many of us can own a home? You know, most of them are in their 30s and living with roommates, like living with buddies. I'm like, and you like this? You like this job? You like this corporation? Where is this going? You know, what are you going to do in 5 years if this company isn't here? No one even understands that their situation is shitty already. Like, that's kind of one of the biggest illusions, is people think they're in a good situation. When you really look at it, it's not good.
No, it's not good. And a lot of people just aren't honest about that. Or they want to just treat it as symptoms. And they want to just, as with this guy talks about with food, you know, you just make an impulse buy. I want a wild cherry Pepsi because fuck my day. You know, and that's what it is for a lot of people. Like, I need a muffin because I can't fucking stand my boss. Or I need just something to snack on while I'm driving 40 minutes to work every day to and from, you know, and it adds up on people. And so how do we make like better choices, and how do we just get, I don't know, I guess with food and nutrition, you can start to feel better within, which helps your day go on. But like at the same time, if you're working 40 hours a week for a corporation, they're using you as the model. You're the face. You're the front man. The corporation doesn't even exist without you actually carrying out their transactions. But if you get like old or ugly or hurt or something, like, it's like, all right, fuck you, man. We'll just discard you and replace you with another face. Because there's all these young faces constantly in bloom. It's a resource that is keeps producing more and more young people. And we're like, sweet, let's fleece all the young people. They get paid nothing. The old assholes own everything. All the people who work the poor jobs rent from the older generation of assholes who own everything. And we eat our own young. It's a lot like dinosaurs, you know. They just consume the young because we're like, we just have to hold on to what we have. We're white. We're older. We have fucking property. We're not going to let these other races or these young people fucking take it from us. And they have no vision. There's no vision about the way things should be. They just think it's sweet.
Right.
They think Jack in the Box saves everything.
Well, I'm glad we are doing an episode on food nutrition. I mean, I've done this once before. Mine is awful and terrible, but I do feel like one out of every 10 shows or so should be about this area, this aspect of the big conspiracy, because we're being actively attacked. You can debate how organized it is, whether it's just individual corporations stripping nutrients from their food just to make it cheaper and make more money, or if it's an orchestrated attack. It doesn't really matter, because the food profile is the same, and it's fucked up. You know, there's no sense in having the knowledge if we're just going to let ourselves get raped. So, but anyway, it's about time we bring in Mr. Hollywood James Colquhoun. But first, I'm going to try to sell you some t-shirts like the good Girl Scout whore that I am. We'll be right back.
We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
All right, everybody. We're 2 months into the new year, and if you're like me, that means by now your goals and aspirations for health and wellness in 2013 have been derailed like an Amtrak train. We truth seekers are not ignorant to the food manipulation by our greediest corporations, but we keep letting them bang us every day. And it's easy to distract ourselves with false flag attacks and chemtrails and vaccines, but what difference does any of it make if we're still eating and drinking their poison slop? Today we have nutritionist James Colquhoun, director and producer of both Food Matters and Hungry for Change, here to try to help us break the cycle, give us some of the education we were denied in school, and teach us how to take care of ourselves a little bit better. James, thanks for being here with Kyle and I. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Greg. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, I loved your movies. Me and Kyle both watched them this week. What got you started in the whole nutrition field? What made this your whole your life's work?
Well, it was really an illness in my own family. My father was diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. He was bedridden for 5 years. And the worst part was that he abdicated responsibility of his health to the medical profession, because he, like many of us, we turn to the medical profession when we're looking for help with a chronic illness. And as a result of that, was prescribed many different types of medications. And they would continually change his medications in order to try find this perfect cocktail that would alleviate all of his symptomatology and make him miraculously well, which was never offered as any form of hope, but they would continue trying. What we found, and this was concurrently as I was studying nutrition, was that these medications were having horrific side effects on him. The medical profession knew about this. They knew these drugs wouldn't help him, but he was the perfect client. In the eyes of the pharmaceutical industry, the perfect customer is someone that will take your drugs from the day they're diagnosed with a particular condition until they die. And we saw this and we saw through it, and we're trying to get to my dad, and that was part of the whole story of his transformation. And it was a horrible situation, and I don't wish it upon anybody, but it's unfortunately happening to a lot of people right now.
Man, that is a super sad story, but I guess, you know, your movies are doing a lot of good work, and I would say they are saving some lives.
Well, you know, the really good thing was is that part of we were looking for a way to help convince my father about the dangers of the pharmaceutical industry, the dangers of the food and agricultural industry, understanding more of the backstory behind the economics of those industries, so that we could convince him to change his viewpoint on drugs are the answer to food is better medicine than drugs. And that these interviews and what became Food Matters, our first film, really shocked him into going losing faith in the pharmaceutical industry, and you know, caused a massive turnaround in his health. He went on to lose 50 pounds.
Oh, that's great.
Started having like sprouts for breakfast and green juices and all sorts of raw foods, and went off all six of his medications and has never touched them since. And that was like 5 years ago. So, you know, there's so much hope out there when people can really lift the veil on this industry and see through it and see for what it really is.
Absolutely. And I wanted to kind of start by saying I have several co-hosts that cycle through this show, and I purposely scheduled this show with Kyle because we've been friends for 20 years, and I'd say the biggest difference between our lifestyles is that Kyle really has converted to being a vegetarian and actively seeks out healthy foods, and I eat fast food 5 to 7 days a week, have never eaten a salad in my life, never, ever drink water, almost always just soda and energy drinks. Sometimes I do drink a little orange juice with my alcohol, but I'm stuck in these habits, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want this to be about me, and I don't want to be stuck in this. But I think a lot of people are sick of eating like shit, and if they're honest with themselves, it's going to take some work, and you got to help us get back on track, James. I mean, tell me, let's talk a little bit about how deeply a diet like the one I just described really does damage us.
Well, I think, you know, one of the really important things to consider, Greg, as we get into that question, is that you're consuming these foods and you're having fun doing it. I mean, you're treating your mouth like an amusement park. You know,
in more ways than one.
You're going day to day. And, you know, Kyle, on the other hand, is, you know, has made this change. So what's the difference here? And let's have a look behind this. I think what's really interesting when you start to understand the fact that the food industry wants you to eat more of their foods. So what do? They chemically manipulate the foods in order to make you addicted to them so that you keep buying them over and over again, and you're going for that food to get that high, that momentary high, that momentary feeling of elation that you get from having the fast food, from having the sweetened sodas, or from having, you know, the deep fried foods. And, you know, what's also happens when you consume these foods is that your body starts to break down. And this is just proof of the fact that we have never experienced higher rates of diet and lifestyle related disease in the whole history of all of humanity. And we have diabetes spinning out of control. Kids are getting it. It's very much diet and lifestyle related. I speak to the best doctors and clinical researchers in the world, and they say treating type 2 diabetes is as easy as slipping off a wet log. I mean, you literally change someone's diet, you control their blood sugar, and they're off their meds. But let's not tell the Diabetes Association this, right? So then, you know, these foods are clearly having an impact on us, along with the toxicity and the chemtrails and all these crazy things that exist out there that didn't exist again 100 years ago. We've got agricultural chemicals, which are horrifically toxic and just really entering their way into the food system. Then we've got genetically modified foods, which we know are causing cancers in long-term studies, consumption studies on animals. So we take this information, and it's little wonder that we're experiencing such high rates of disease. What's great to realize is that this can be turned around. So I think for yourself, Greg, you might have not yet fallen over from a heart attack. You know, you might not yet have diabetes. You might not yet have the big C word. I don't wish any of that upon you. But you have to realize that this way of living and interacting with your food could very likely lead to something like that in the future. And statistically, it's fact. And, you know, I don't want to alarm you with this, but, you know, Kyle and I are going to gang up on you until you commit to this on this show right now.
Hey, no, but, that's fair.
You know, I think that a lot of people take action when they have a critical event happen in their life, whether their dad got sick, like right. in my instance, or whether they get sick. And everybody, it's a different motivation, or whether they want to get that girl and lose their stomach, or whether the girl wants to get the guy and lose her stomach. You know, like, we all turn to cleaning up our lifestyle and our diets motivated by different factors. And for you, it might be the fact that you really understand that these companies are willingly and knowingly manipulating the food, manipulating the chemical additives that go into food to make you addicted to them. You don't want to be a slave to those companies any more than I do.
No.
So let's break free from that. That's what I say.
Hey, hear, hear. But, you know, hunger, you mentioned the GMOs that are known to cause cancer. I have a friend who is in the biology field, and he's kind of a conventional thinker, and he looks at people who are afraid of GMOs as just being irrational. He's like, there's plenty of studies that show, blah, blah, blah. But Hungry for Change, it touches on the corruption between junk food manufacturers and the FDA. And I think a lot of people would probably be surprised to hear how that works. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Well, one of the big problems we have with our regulatory bodies here in the US, for that matter, in every Western developed country in the world, we have a revolving door syndrome. So we have people going from industry into the FDA, and then people going from the FDA back into industry. And worse yet, it's the industry's responsibility to test and prove their products safe and then present those studies to the market, to the FDA for approval. You know, what is ludicrous, taking drug studies for instance, is that the drug companies need to prove that their drug is more effective than a placebo in two studies. That doesn't mean they can do 98 studies that fail and have two studies that succeed and present those two to the FDA and get approval for their medication. Similar things in the food side of the world. What's interesting is they only test many of the studies that have been submitted to the FDA for the genetically modified foods. They're only tested in a short period of time, like say up to 90 days. But then most of the effects happen after 90 days. So you've got many European countries that have done long-term studies, and they're like, this is crazy. There's no way we're allowing genetically modified foods into our food chain. We're banning this. And lots of European and EU countries have done that. And that in America and in Australia, which we're letting more into Australia now, in America we have these less than 90-day short-term studies submitted to the regulatory agency for approval. They get approved, and then we're all told it's completely safe. So like so many things these days, we need to become our own case agents, and we really need to be so cautious and aware of everything we're consuming. If you grab a snack down at the corner store, if it's got canola oil or soy oil in it and it's not certified organic, or GMO-free, then that's GMO. If it's got corn products or maize products or cornstarch or high fructose corn syrup, it's coming from GMO corn. Long-term studies, not good. So we need to try steer clear of that.
I think what they fail to like think about with genetically modifying crops is that what a company like Monsanto will do is change only one gene. And the idea that changing only one gene will result in, you know, they do it for resistance to their own pesticides mm-hmm. and other things as well. But when a seed naturally goes through a life cycle and produces another seed for the next generation, it has taken on thousands of chemical processes that we do not understand at all. Nature is much, much more complex and evolved than Monsanto's chemical processes. They really only change one gene, and they don't know the consequence of what that does, but they hold that as intellectual property, and then it creates a whole problem all around the world.
Absolutely. I think that the concept of intellectual property over something that exists in nature is a really interesting debate. For them to be able to manipulate the gene in a particular, like for instance, injecting the genes of a sole fish or a flounder into a tomato so that it's resistant to frost, they can create that as intellectual property. But that is just not right, I don't feel, on some level. There's just not something right with that. And the worst thing is the Terminator seeds. So they create these seeds that the farmers have to buy and then plant. And then instead of that plant going to fruit and then them harvesting the fruit or the nut or the seed and then collecting seed for the next year's planting, those seeds are actually sterile so that they have to go and repurchase seeds off Monsanto, which is part of it makes good economic business sense for Monsanto to do that, but it doesn't make natural biological sense in the environment. And so we've got Terminator seeds, and these are just ethically and morally wrong, I feel, right. On some grounds. It just doesn't feel right. We've collected seeds for years. We started domestication of grass and barley and wheat about 11,800 years ago. And at the same time, we're starting the domestication of some animals. And since that time, we've collected seeds and we've planted them and we've kept this, you know, relationship with the environment. Right. Now the seeds are dead after the crop, and then you need to go buy more from this company. I mean, who came up with that? Well, it's like George Orwellian, isn't it?
Yes, it's very jacked up. But something me and Kyle were just talking about before we brought you in was, will problems like these ever be solved within the framework of capitalism? The way we treat our environment, the way it becomes a rationale to use Terminator seeds because you can look at it from a business sense, and Joe Schmo will be like, oh, well, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense when you factor in capitalism. But is capitalism more important than worldwide health? Because we seem to have an attitude right now that it is.
That's a great, an amazing question. I think that that's a deep question, and I love musing on it. But I think that the capitalist system is probably one of the better of the worst systems that exist in the modern world. And I think that we can use it for good. But the problem is that people are very easily corrupted by greed and wealth. And when a company's main ethos is to be responsible to adding more value to shareholders' investment, then that's going to lead to all sorts of ills committed against humanity. Where I think we're coming into an era now, and I'm more of an optimist than a pessimist,
right.
But I feel that we're coming into an era where companies can sort of dance this line between being a for-profit company and doing a great amount of good to the world. And, you know, before it used to be you have non-profits that did good and then you have for-profits that commit evil, right, to make money.
Right.
And now I feel it's coming together and we're seeing more consciousness in business. And it's a really tricky place to have consciousness because money comes into it and money has an energy. But I feel that it exists and I see that more companies are opening up to this. And then as they do that, they're getting more, I guess, good vibes happening with that. Like Tom's Shoes is one example. You buy a pair of shoes and they give a pair of shoes to a child in Africa. You know, I don't always believe that giving shoes to kids in Africa is a good thing because actually barefoot's better than wearing shoes. So we should be all barefoot and not wearing shoes. But it's an example of a company trying to do some good and really commit something to the world. Just like we're trying to disseminate this information about helping people break free from the pharmaceutical industry. And if we can, people buy our film, they're investing in us as a company. And then from that, we can make another film and reach more people. So I feel that we're trying to interact in that environment as well. Trying to convert the Monsantos and the GlaxoSmithKlines and the Bayers of this world to conscious, loving organizations that are here for the good of humanity and benefiting patient outcomes is going to be one hell of a difficult task. But I think it's a noble goal, and I think it should be something that we strive for, because it's not going to be a system that's going to be completely eradicated overnight. But the challenge goes far deeper with that when you realize that the Federal Reserve is a private shareholding organization that prints money. So then that really messes everything up and you lose all hope. But I think we should still try hold on to this grip of it, and everyone should try to consume and buy things that are good. Like if you buy organics, you're voting with your shopping trolley, your shopping cart. If you buy local food, you're supporting a local farmer. If you buy films that are about uncovering this stuff, if you listen to this radio station and support it, you're supporting the evolution of this good that's going to get out there. So I believe in capitalism. There we go.
Oh, man.
I just personally have to disagree. I feel that it is a bit of an illusion that with our proper consumer choices that we can somehow fix the condition of the world. And I do agree that companies like Tom's Shoes are building a corporation on top of ethics, which previously didn't exist at all. And so that is a movement in the right direction. But I really feel like the 1-2 punch comes not only from corporations like Monsanto, which the real answer, in my opinion, as an activist should be, they shouldn't be allowed to exist.
Yeah.
They're allowed to exist because the people accept that, oh, what they're doing is not toxic and criminal and insane, but we allow them to exist and here they are. But the second punch comes from government, which puts all their subsidies in the farmers that treat the soil like it is an enemy. And they're attacking the soil, and they're fighting. They're doing these giant monocultured crops, and they're pouring chemicals on it because they're just like, I need death. In order to grow my corn, I need liquid death and just to kill larvae, all pests and everything. And you get into this in your films. And so I just think it's interesting that the government that we elect, you know, they pay the farmers to do this rather than getting together little collectives where we can do locally produced organic produce, which is proven to work. And I think that's the step in the right direction. I don't think a corporation – we can't Monsanto our way out of all these food problems.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you as well, equally on both of those points. And the problem with the subsidies is we have lobby and advisory boards lobbying our governments in the US, Australia, United Kingdom, all throughout Western Europe, saying, hey, GMO is safe, or pharmaceutical drugs are good for the people. And that's because they're put there by industry and they pay them a lot of money to be there. So this is such a corrupt system, and it's not an easy one to break down, but bottom up. I mean, there's a lot of people doing work from the top down, and, you know, I like that. I was sitting in on a meeting the other day here on this commission on human rights who wants to basically get awareness out there about psychotropic drugging, and they're working on, you know, congressmen and members of state and trying to get all this, and I'm just like, good for you, but there's no way I'm going to fight that battle because it's just unwinnable. I mean, I think it has to come from the people. And if the people boycotted genetically modified foods, then those government subsidies are going to go to waste. But it's a tough thing. You're right.
There are some countries where that is happening, right? I mean, some produce-producing countries are actually kicking Monsanto out. I think I've read some headlines like that.
I think there's been a lot of uprising in India over the last few years because Monsanto has made a big effort to get into India as part of their green revolution. And these poor farmers, when they don't make a return on their crops that's significant enough for them to cover the lease of their land, they're committing suicide by drinking the pesticides from the same company.
Oh my God.
And there was over 1,000 deaths last year committed in this fashion. And it's just, there's no, like, but we were all organic before the 1930s. I mean, nothing was pesticides before then. And then after World War II, they converted all those death-killing drugs from the genocide of World War II into killing bugs and pesticides. And it's not you know, got momentary increase in yields, but it's not going to help. We need to look after the soil. The soil is where the bugs and this life form exists on levels we can hardly comprehend, and chemicals kill that life form, and humus and mulch and organic matter, you know, really build it up. And we need to acknowledge that that's how the world has existed for so many more years before we thought we were smarter than it.
Hey, I totally agree. And let's talk a little bit about diet. You know, I actually made the mistake of watching your movies this week with my girlfriend, and now she's sort of forcing me to take action. And, you know, it seems like way too much for someone like me. But if we're starting small and you were coaching someone with a horrible diet, what would you say is the first thing you got to eliminate? Is it the French fries? Is it the soda?
Well, first thing is I would not, and this is going to sound controversial, but I love it, is not to eliminate anything. So because when you start to eliminate things from your diet, you go into what's called the diet mentality, and it puts you in a diet trap. And when you talk about elimination, people run. Like, you got to cut out milk from your diet. You got to cut out soda. If I start telling you this, you're going to be like, great, yeah, that guy was so nice on that radio show, but no way I'm doing it. And if you look at the history of diets, which we talk about more in our most recent film, Hungry for Change, but all these fad diets have not really worked long term. And they come and go, and people lose weight and they put it back on. And, you know, really great statistics is that in the US, there are $60 billion a year spent on diet and weight loss related products. UCLA Berkeley have shown that up to 2/3 of people who go on a diet, that's $40 billion worth of that product, fail and regain more weight than when they started. So diets don't work, and this whole illusion of let's eliminate this and manipulate the ratio of calories to fat, to carbohydrates, is momentarily going to affect your metabolism and might cause you to lose weight, but then you put it back on eventually. The best strategy we've got, and here's the solution, is to add in the good stuff. That's all you got to do.
Okay.
So don't change anything. Keep your fries, keep your fast food, however much I hate to say that. You know,
it's like weaning someone off of heroin. You got to do it one
exactly,
step at a time.
Yeah, step at a time. So I think, you know, one of the most powerful things to add in, if you had to choose one thing, would be green vegetable juices. Freshly squeezed at home. And if you don't want to buy a juicer, I've got another solution for you, and it's a green powder, like a barley grass or a wheatgrass powder, or barley, wheatgrass, spirulina grass powder mixed in. You mix in with water. Now, that's going to taste less good than the green vegetable juice, so it'd probably motivate you a little bit more to get a juicer. But you can get a juicer now for $100 or less. And if you just did this once each morning for 30 days and you didn't change anything else in your diet, you would experience a massive revolution in your health, and you would naturally want to move towards eating more of these foods because of how good you feel. So you juice up celery, cucumber, kale, lemon, that sorts of things, and maybe a little bit of apple to sweeten it if you feel that you need that, but you don't have to have that in there. And that is going to cleanse and alkalize and support your organs and your body and like you can't even imagine. And this
really
is the quickest. And even if you've got a beaten up digestive system, you've got, you know, poor probiotic gut bacteria, and you're not digesting and assimilating your nutrients very well because you've been eating a lot of fast food or a lot of gluten, if you get that juice in, it just goes straight through the cell walls of your gut, straight into your bloodstream, and you get that instantaneous, like, flood of nutrients and cleansing minerals to your body. So my suggestion would be just to have that only and add that in. And then as you go, you can start to do more additions, like add a salad with your lunch. I know that sounds crazy and you don't eat salads.
But I know. I've never... Like, my girlfriend cannot believe that I've never eaten a salad. And I think the truth is that, like, I really only eat hot food, hot meat and hot French fries and things that are coming out of the fryer. Like, if it's not hot, it tastes kind of gross to me. So a room temperature salad, you know, it is what it is. You know, obviously,
well,
I can't live like this
forever. Why not make a hot salad? So you take a salad, right? Take a bed of greens.
Throw it in the microwave?
No, do not put things in the microwave. Throw your microwave out. That's what you got to do with that thing. You don't want a napalm microwave death machine in your like kitchen. So radiation machine. So what you do is you take a salad and you bake up. How do you say bake in the US? Broil? Bake?
Bake and broil? Yeah, there's a broil setting on my oven. I don't use it much.
Well, no, you just put these, cut up some Sweet potato is a great one, or yams. Cut up some sweet potato or yams, put that in the oven, and some potatoes. You know, roast them until they're nice. You can put a little bit of garlic in there if you want. Once they're roasted, put that on top of your salad, and you can have, if you like, a little bit of yogurt or a little bit of dressing with olive oil and lemon juice, or hemp seed oil and lemon juice, something like this. And you've got like the hot roasted veggies, cauliflower, that sort of thing there, with the greens.
Okay.
That's a warm salad dish.
I like that solution. That's not bad. But
that's sort of tricking you into eating a salad.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to have to use those kind of tricks because my body and my mind are not going to be getting along for the next couple of weeks, I don't think. But what about the idea that heat causes nutrients to come out of food? I think that's a big part of Food Matters.
It is. And what's really interesting is that with Food Matters, we were looking at, if you've got people that have chronic illness, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, depression, mental illness, these sorts of ones that we know are the main ones of diet and lifestyle. And then we look at, okay, what has been happening in the underground health world for like 100 years? What's been happening in that world or longer that has been causing people to recover from those illnesses? And when you look at what makes people recover from those illnesses, like actually get rid of them, I'm not allowed to say the cure word, but get rid of them, then if you look at what the similarities are between them, there's a lot of raw food in there, like uncooked, unadulterated fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, etc., herbs and sea vegetables, that sort of stuff. And that's really interesting. And then you start to look at some of the research on raw foods, and you find out that when you cook a food or you raise it above a temperature, which is about 112, 114 degrees Fahrenheit for, you know, a period of time or even a short period of time, you kill off a lot of the enzymes in that food. And additionally, you kill off a lot of the heat sensitive vitamins and some of the mineral content. And so by cooking food, you're actually reducing the nutrient content of that food, and you're reducing the enzymatic content of that food, which helps you break it down and assimilate and use a lot of the nutrients from the food. So a high raw food diet is super powerful for people who have these chronic illnesses that want to get off them. Now, if you believe in the fact that prevention is – if you believe in the fact that the cure is the same as prevention – and if you wanted to prevent a lot of those diseases, then you need to eat a high raw food diet. Now, what I'm also wary of, the fact is that, you know, we don't need to eat 100% raw. And a lot of people who have sort of extremist personalities come into raw food and they're like, oh, this is perfect. I can eat 100% raw. I can eat 100% vegan. I can eat 100% this. And I'm really cautious of taking out that dogmatic association with I am this, or I am 80% raw, I am 90% raw. I think we should just understand the fact that if you grew a garden in your backyard and you planted tomatoes, vegetables, cucumbers, celery, if you watch that grow and all that energy that goes into it, you want to eat it straight from the garden. That's the fun part. You don't want to take that tomato that you've nurtured up and then just chop it to bits and throw it into a stew and just let it go to nothing. I mean, you can also do that. But it's really interacting with that live fruits and vegetables and juicing them as well. So when you start to do that, you bring this life force energy into your body, which is going to heal your body, give you more energy, make you feel more alive. And it's a powerful thing to do. And that's part of the raw food story.
Yeah, I absolutely love gardening. Our last year was our very first year gardening, and just working hands-on with the plants, watching it grow, eating fresh tomatoes that are warmed by the sun off the vine. It's indescribable. What they sell at the store and call a tomato is a joke compared to what it actually tastes like. And that's the example everybody knows. But, you know, all fruit and all vegetables that you grow yourself have this certain kind of connection where you just feel like, man, this is so good. It's so, I don't know, you just feel good about producing it.
Absolutely. And it's really, is Greg laughing right now? He's like, there's no way. I'm not going to eat a salad. There's no way you're getting me gardening. But Greg, we did this for so long, Greg. You know, we gardened, we got our hands dirty, we interacted with our soil. And most importantly, a lot of people don't know this or want to talk about it, our manure and our sewage became our soil. So our bacteria was feeding the bacteria in the soil and creating an environment for these foods to thrive in a bacteria-rich soil environment. And that's really important, to have that compost and breaking down all of our old plant matter and our plant material back into the soil. That creates such an incredible environment in the soil for these foods to grow. And when they grow in that environment, it's completely different than something growing in an environment devoid of minerals, where they're just dumping petrochemical extracted minerals onto the soil in the form of NPK or nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. That's it. They're sticking it on this fertilizer onto the soil, spraying it to keep the bugs away because the plants are deficient in minerals, so they become weakened immune systems, which means they're more open to being attacked by pests, same as the human body, or disease. And then we spray them, and then we've got deficient, devoid, nutrient-depleted foods going into our food system for the whole of us to eat, and no wonder we're getting sick. So it's a really interesting connection. I'm really glad, Kyle, that you're gardening. That's awesome.
Yeah, I asked another question too, and this is a little bit off topic, but it's in relation to gardening. It's in relation to sunlight, and that I have a bit of an esoteric like interest, and part of what I'm interested in is how people relate to themselves as animals, and I guess mostly because they're mobile and we see animals moving around, but we don't see plants moving, so we don't relate ourselves to plants. But I was wondering how much you feel the lack of sunlight and the vitamin D deficiency is kind of like a plague or a problem for people right now.
I think it's a huge problem. I mean, it's been identified as one of the most common nutrients that we're lacking, vitamin D, and many people have vitamin D deficiency. And, you know, what I think is really interesting from a history perspective, and you might agree or disagree with me on this, but as we moved from more subtropical environments to more temperate and cooler climates, particularly in Europe, a lot of the European cultures would consume raw dairy products and or cultured dairy products. And also a lot of the traditional cultures that did eat animal products would often only eat the organ meats first. And if you think about this and you look at the studies of vitamin D, those parts of the animal body, if you don't live in an area that has a lot of sunlight, the milk and also the organ meats are concentrated sunlight. And so it's such an important thing that I'm not saying we should eat them. What I'm saying is that historically it's really interesting how we've tried to adapt to this concept of having vitamin D deficiency. And it's rife in the United Kingdom and especially in many parts of the world where they call it sunlight affection deficiency or something. SAD, basically. You know, that's where one of the places where the acronym came from. And you know, so vitamin D is such an important thing, and the best way we can get it is sunlight. If you live in an area where there's zero sunlight for 6 months of the year, you may need to consider supplementing it or having it in other forms. But sunlight is such an important thing, and because of how it enters the skin and converts the cholesterol that naturally exists in our body into vitamin D, which is almost a hormone and a vitamin that it circulates within our body. And we need to get sunlight, just like plants need sunlight as well.
I definitely feel like I've been suffering from that myself. I mean, just the 9-to-5 job keeps you inside during sunlight hours. And then on my days off, I'm recording a podcast, editing a podcast. And it's not until the sun goes down that I'm really like free to enjoy myself. So, yeah, that's probably another problem. And I live in San Diego. I'm paying this high premium in rent. And I never go outside. Never go outside. I feel like
I think the solution is, I think some basic things we need to do because we're in such a disconnected world now is A, walk barefoot on the ground at least once a day. We're so affected by electromagnetic frequencies and radiation that we need to walk barefoot to decharge ourselves and like re-earth and reconnect with the earth.
It seems pretty new agey, but I have heard that from several sources that there's just something about it that actually is beneficial in some way.
Well, it's new agey, but it's not like there's you can hook up like voltmeters and all this stuff to your fingers and actually sense, and if I'm holding an iPhone or a laptop or I'm near a Wi-Fi, I can see there's current running through my body, and then if I put my foot barefoot on the ground even while I'm near them, it earths straight off me and it no longer accumulates in my body. So all this electromagnetic frequencies and radiations are affecting us in crazy ways. And, you know, there's also another documentary on this that I saw recently, and they banned cell phone towers within 5 kilometers, which is about 2 and a bit miles, from all schools throughout Scandinavia because of how the electromagnetic frequency affects children and younger babies. And it actually disrupts the signaling in their DNA and can cause cancer in them. And they see cancer clusters in towns that live close to these cell phone towers. So walking barefoot can help eliminate a lot of that and get it off your body, especially barefoot on sand. So you're paying for the premium in San Diego. Get on the sand, Greg.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm going to have to institute so many changes. One of the big problems with diet to me is that it just takes so much foresight and planning. And I guess, you know, a lot of people who do it every day say, well, it doesn't have to. But I mean, it really does. Because on a 30-minute lunch break, where can someone go? If someone didn't pre-prepare and you got a 30-minute lunch break, can you do anything good for yourself? Or is it just all going to be damage?
You can. Of course you can. It's just a matter of, like, pull out your phone and get your maps and just see if you can find something that's organic, at least. So if you're not able to get something that's got some salad or some raw with it, find something that's clean food that hasn't had these pesticides or these toxins put into it, because at least that's going to continue to reduce the toxic load on your body. And in San Diego, there's even there's organic burger companies starting up. So
now, is that okay? I mean, I assumed that was off the table. Is there a way to use meat?
That's better than having non-organic. Like, there's all these different steps in this evolution, and mm-hmm. I've been in this for a long time. I've been raw food, I've been vegan, I've been vegetarian, I've introduced some animal products at some times. And I think it's really, the more I've learned, the more I've tried to disassociate myself with labeling anything as right or wrong, because that's taking us back into the dark ages of Christianity is good and Muslims are bad, you know what I mean? They're not, and neither is meat eating or vegetarianism. Both have benefits. Both have things that are potential just detractions from those ways. And in either way, you need to be tuned in. And I think that one of the most important things is to eat clean, organic food products that somehow support and interconnect us with our local food systems and environments based on that season and based on what's available and based on what's good. So if you tell me what's better, an organic burger with yam fries or a conventional fast food burger from one of the big chains with non-organic fries, then I'm going to tell you the organic for sure.
Of course, right.
And so I just want every day to be just making some sort of, hey, I did a healthy thing today. I ate that organic, or I had a green juice. And it's just about adding in and having fun with that and not ever thinking, shit, this is going to be monumental. How am I ever going to do this? Or at least have one good, even if you have just your juice in the morning, and then God forbid, or Muhammad or Allah forbid, whatever the term is, but you go eat horribly for the rest of the day, that's still one step that's better than the day before.
Right.
And I really believe in that philosophy, and I don't believe that we should all try to convert everyone to 100% raw food, vegan, barefoot, wearing a poncho overnight, you know? And so I really want to just respect that process in people and in yourself as well, Greg.
For sure. How would you coach someone who prefers meat? I mean, how would you do that the right way? Outside of making sure it's from a healthy source, what particular meats are there, ones that are better than others, ones to avoid? If you can't cut out meat entirely, or even I'm still probably going to be 60% meat. So within that framework, how would you better someone?
Are you laughing, Kyle?
I'm laughing a little
bit. He doesn't like that.
Well, it's not necessarily the social context of what happens to the animals that are raised for meat. I mean, that's a part of it. But I also am interested in casein, the protein of meat, and how it lingers in you and how it takes a while to digest and kind of poisons you from the inside. I'm also factoring that in as well.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you that as well, Kyle. There are health and ethical concepts within the vegetarian and vegan-based or plant-based diet. But, you know, taking you, Greg, here now, okay, so you want to eat 60% meat diet. You know, that's it.
That's 40% better than what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, it's 40% before. Okay, so let's take that. for me, the biggest thing I want to communicate with you about this is that animal products or any products that have a high fat content, nuts and seeds included, toxins are lipophilic, which means they're fat loving. So toxins accumulate in fats, whether that's in the fat of a nut and a seed or in the fat of animal products or in the butter fat or in milk fat or in bacon fat. So toxins accumulate in fat. I think toxicity is one of the biggest things. So we want to reduce toxic load is one of our huge primary goals of doing this, because that's going to clear everything up and help you have more energy, more vitality, more strength. You can do double the amount of podcasts in one day. So if you can reduce your toxic load and increase your nutrients, that's a win. So basically we're high toxic, low nutrients, as most of us, right? So we want to reduce our toxins and increase our nutrients. It's pretty simple. If you want to go on the extreme end, you just have tons and tons of green fruits and vegetables, go for it, you know, get on that. But if you want to start making that adjustment and go 60% meat, 40% fruits and vegetables, which is a 40% improvement, that's awesome. But on the animal product side, it needs to be clean and it needs to be organic. And really importantly as well, it needs to be grass-fed or pastured. You know, a lot of the ways these animals are kept these days are indoors, and they're fed a diet they were never designed to eat. I mean, I see one of the massive problems we've got is increased meat and dairy consumption in this country. Yes. But then as we've increased our meat and dairy consumption, we have increased disease. That's true. You look at that chart and it makes sense. One of the things that's not always considered with that chart is the fact that as we started introducing more meat and animal products, we changed what we fed those animals, and we were feeding them GM corn, GM soy. And so these animals actually have within their bodies corn and soy, which has a very different fatty acid ratio than their grass-fed, naturally reared, outdoor, free-ranging counterparts. And what that means in simple terms is that the bad products with the corn and the soy are high in omega-9 and low in omega-3, which causes inflammation. Inflammation causes heart disease, diabetes, all sorts of stuff, depending on your genetic tendency as well, in a very small part. But the grass-fed counterparts are high in omega-3, or the little chickens that get to cruise around outside and eat like little bugs and little bits of herbs and stuff, they have much higher omega-3 in their eggs and in their flesh than their indoor grain-fed counterparts. And they're also much lower in toxins. So you get more nutrients, better fatty acid ratios, which is better for your inflammation, better for your health, plus low toxins. You have to go organic on your animal products, and it's going to cost you more, so you're going to go even higher on your vegetables. So that's a good thing as well. So what do you think of that, Greg? Does that make sense?
It 100%. And in San Diego, I see that a lot. I definitely try to do that where I can. There are a couple burger places that are, you know, that's their whole thing, is that they're grass-fed, and, you know, they taste the same to me, but I mean, obviously they're better. But to take this kind of angle slightly deeper, there are some people who say that there's something to just the energy transfer between an animal that lived a happy, healthy life and one that lived a miserable, prisoned life in the dark. Do you think there's anything to that at all?
I think there is, and I think that etherically there is, from an energetics perspective. I mean, when you see an animal that's been slaughtered under an environment where it's not in a happy place, there's a lot of fear and a lot of, you know, just it's not a nice thing to see.
Depression.
And what happens is that, like, if we were experiencing those sorts of emotions, we release a whole range of toxic chemicals and hormones into our bodies, such as cortisol, for instance, and adrenaline, and that changes the biochemical makeup of our body. So if you were on a deserted island and one of us had to kill each other and eat the other person to survive, you know, we don't want this situation, but imagine it, right?
And yeah, you might be worse off if you ate me.
Yeah, you'd be better. Anyway, let's not go there. So, but say if as you were killing me, like, I was trying to get away and I'm freaked out, I'm like so scared that I'm putting all these hormones and all this adrenaline, all this cortisol into my body, and then you kill me and then you eat me. Those hormones exist in the body. You do that to an animal, same thing. Now, there's not really an ethical way that you can kill a human or an animal, for that matter. Let's just understand that. But there is an ethical ways that you can raise them and let them be outside in the sun, where they're designed to be like us humans, barefoot on the ground, so they can get some earthing from all our shitting EMF technology, plus also eat grass and have a good time, and they have a good biochemical makeup in their body, and then killed in the most ethical way possible. That's a completely different animal than the one that's killed under a factory farm environment. And there are hormonal tests and things that you can see the difference biochemically within those meats as well. So I think that that's definitely the case. And I hope that's just another reason for you to make that decision.
Of course. And one other thing I was curious about is salt, because I hear salt is so, like, I've been getting my McDonald's fries with unsalted lately, trying to make small steps. I hear from some people salt is bad, and then other people, like my girlfriend and I, we were at some desert festival, and we stopped by this little booth where they had this someone who reads your energy, and the girl's like, oh, you need more salt in your diet. You don't have enough, you know, something about alkaline and whatever. To me, it's just kind of, I feel like they're just rattling off something random. But, you know, they said, you don't have enough salt. And, I mean, is salt bad? Is there a good way, good salt and bad salt?
I think Greg and, you know, Kyle will probably agree on this, as he's been journeying on this nutrition foray with me as well, is that there's so much conflicting information in the nutrition space. And, you know, I think that it's really one of the first things you have to ask yourself if you're asking if something is good or bad is, did we used to eat it 100 years ago? Did we used to eat it 500 years ago? And I think that with salt and pepper and spices, in that matter, we have interacted with those products. But you have to be careful about the type of salt. And I believe that salt can be good in the body for certain instances where you need to detoxify and cleanse and decalcify certain organs in the body, whether you might have a chronic illness or you're looking to detoxify. Then there are protocols such as the Gerson therapy that promotes a higher potassium, lower sodium diet for cleansing. But I think for most of us on a day-to-day basis, the introduction of salt, be it in like a really nice hand-harvested Celtic sea salt, in a bit of water to remineralize and create some alkaline minerals in the bloodstream, can be powerful. Using natural salts or Himalayan sea salt on foods to give it flavor, I don't think is bad on a day-to-day basis. So I think salt is good, but it's the right salt, not this 10,000 degree Fahrenheit white treated bleached iodized table salt. That stuff is nasty. We didn't eat that 100 years ago.
Right. And before we wrap up, because we're kind of getting close to the end of the hour, I wanted to talk a little bit about mindset. I mean, there's another documentary I saw recently called How to Live Forever, and it basically examines the lifestyles of several people that are like over 95. And in the movie, most of them drink and smoke and have bad eating habits, but that's mainly shown for comedic value. But the point of the movie is that a happy, stress-free, positive mindset is more powerful than anything, including diet. And of course, you know, I'm getting into my escape hatch here. But I mean, is there something to be said about that?
There is a lot to be said about that. And it's actually one of the most powerful things. And I think that what's interesting is that with most things in our life, whether it's personal development technologies or this or that, it's like 80% psychology, 20% mechanics. And, you know, I honestly deeply believe in that. My wife, Laurentine, her grandmother is 102 years old. She still lives at home by herself in Holland. And what's super cool is that she actually just had to go temporarily into this like housing home for a few months because the cold water pipes freezed up at her house and the taps wouldn't deliver water anymore. So like, this woman is hardcore and amazing. And she's like you, Greg, she doesn't drink much water. But I'll tell you what she does do. She does like meditate and pray or give thanks. It has some form of gratefulness or gratitude for her health every day. These rituals are so powerful that you've got cultures that are existing and eating foods that we think are bad and living really long. And some of the examples used in the film, like Buster as well, the guy that was drinking beer and smoking cigarettes during marathon, is going well. And I believe in this 100% as well. But I'll tell you what, Greg, the hardest thing for people to change is mindset, by far. Our little brain in there, and especially our animal brain, our limbic brain, and our subconscious is so heavily conditioned, especially in the first 6 years of our life, from our environment, that it's really powerful to take over that. And all of our habits, how we treat people, how we talk to ourselves, how we treat ourselves, is so conditioned that it takes a lot of work to readjust that. And it's a lot less work for you, Greg, to add a green juice in the morning. And I'm telling you that if you start working on your psychology, you'll actually dig up some things that are probably not similar to Buster, or probably not similar to my grandmother living in Holland. And so I really believe that mindset plays a massive part in it. And I think we should use that in conjunction with, and, you know, this is going to sound crazy, and I'm so glad it's at the end of the interview because this is a good spot for it. But in Hungry for Change, our most recent film, Dr. Christian Northrup, she's an awesome doctor, OBGYN, amazing at what she does. She believes that one of the most important things we can do for our health is self-love. And I'm not talking about playing with yourself in the bathtub. I'm talking about, I'm talking about looking yourself in the mirror and saying, I love you. I appreciate you. I show gratefulness that I exist in this body right here, right now on this planet. I'm here to do good. I have some sort of reverence and appreciation for my temple. And that mindset of having that is so powerful. And there's so much proving that she was saying there's so many studies coming out now where that alone can impact health so powerfully. But I think if we had started the conversation with this, people would be really turned off because that's pretty far on the hippie end of the spectrum. But I am a huge believer in mindset. But I think equally powerfully, you can synergistically put the two together. Have the green juice and say you love yourself in the front of the mirror, Greg. Watch that happen.
Right. And that'll promote that. Well, if you eat the healthy foods, that will promote the changing, the monumental task of changing your psychology if you do have a poor self-image or something similar.
Exactly. And I think what's interesting is that we might think that we don't have a poor self-image or this or that, but we subconsciously limit ourselves in so many ways every day. And being aware of that and using that is a really powerful thing for longevity, for health. And in that Bruce Lipton, Biology of Belief, how you think changes the biochemistry of your body, which changes the biochemistry around your cells, which changes the message that gets sent to the center of your cell, which turns on or off DNA and genetic markers and predispositions. So we can change. My mom had cancer, my mom's mom had cancer, my mom's mom had cancer, and I'm going to get cancer. I can switch off that cancer gene by changing my thoughts. That exists. That's true. That's science. I mean, wow. Read Bruce Lipton's stuff on the Biology of Belief. He's a genius. So our science now proves that mindset affects and can turn on or off genes and receptors in our body. I mean, that is so amazing that we've come to this discovery now. Equally so, eating certain types of foods can influence the biology around the cell, which if you have a gene that is turned on to predispose you to cancer, you can switch that off by manipulating the environment around the gene through the foods you eat, and that's called epigenetics. So we can take, I'm genetically predisposed, I'm going to get this, to changing that through diet and mindset. I mean, that's new medicine. If people don't want to get these diseases, they can realize they're not a product of their environment. They can create their own environment through their food and through their thoughts. So that's incredibly powerful information.
Right. And I mean, you know, people at home, you should make this change. I want to try to make this change. I mean, I get really down on myself for really letting myself get manipulated by these heartless corporations. We should not be giving them our money. And I hate the way they do business. In fact, I said to Kyle a few months ago that the next evolution in corporate food would be that if you're a Pepsi drinker, they're going to put some chemical additive in it that makes you physically ill when you have a Coke from the competitor. And I mean, that's kind of a joke, but I mean, not really.
No, you're right. I mean, they're already using aspartame. I mean, that thing is known to cause crazy side effects within the body, formaldehyde buildup within the brain, addiction, especially when combined with caffeine. And these are the so-called healthy versions of soda, the sugar-free versions.
Right. And so the high fructose corn syrup.
That's on the sugared version. So you're at a loss either way.
It's a lose-lose. You cannot drink soda, people. But James, it's been a great time. I've really enjoyed it. Your movies are very motivating. I do think that anyone should see them, especially if you are struggling with making a life change, because it's not a diet. It is a really serious life change for the long haul. But the earlier you start, the better you're going to feel the effects, and the sooner they're going to work, and the longer your life will be happy. But are there any other little nuggets of wisdom or tips or tricks you would advise the audience on?
Well, you know, one thing I'd love to make people aware of is that we are committed to just helping this information get out there. Every year we run free screening events where people can watch the film for free. We're doing one with our latest film, Hungry for Change, in March. We give away a lot of extended interview content, recipes. So you can sign up for our newsletter on foodmatters.tv or hungryforchange.tv, either of the sites, depending on what film you love more. And, you know, we'll just help hold your hand through this landscape, because there's a lot of disinformation out there, and we want people to be free from that and really have control of their health. You know, so great speaking to you guys today. It was a really fun interview. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Sure. Kyle, was there anything you wanted to add before we let James go?
I just wanted to add that for me personally, it became a whole quest, you know, and it speaks to the idea of putting your mind into it and getting in the right mindset, that eating properly became a whole life quest, and you get to chart your journey, and you make certain, you know, mile markers, and people see your transformation. And I feel like I reached such a point in my quest and my dedication to it that my parents understood that this was legitimate and this wasn't a fad, and I wasn't just, you know, not eating meat to appease my girlfriend or something like that. And to see them now, my parents, who I never thought could make this change, have begun the big quest, and, you know, and they've gotten away from this what's good for you and what's bad for you, and, you know, and gotten into the mindset that I'm going to do this and I'm going to stick to it. And each day is, you know, just one step, but it builds towards something. And it's really cool. It makes me feel like they're full of, like, more vibrant energy, which I felt like when I took my health more seriously as well. You just kind of become more potent with energy. And I know that sounds new agey, but
powerful.
That's great, Kyle. I commend you. And, you know, when I helped my dad at the start, I never thought he was going to change, and now he's eating better than me and went to a 4-day like chanting retreat last week. And he was an accountant for like 30 years and ate meat and drank beer every night, and now he's like a vegetarian chanting hippie. So watch out, parents. You know,
it's a slippery slope, guys.
It is a slippery slope.
James, it's been awesome, you know. Thanks so much for being here. Thanks for educating me and the people. And thanks for your documentaries. Great stuff.
Thank you, guys. Absolutely fabulous chatting today.
Thank you. Hope
to stay in touch.
All righty. Enjoy your day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Damn. How'd you think that went? I mean, you're already eating pretty healthy, but did you get anything out of that?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. I just thought he's a really cool, relaxed guest. I thought he spoke a lot of interesting truth about all kinds of nutrition.
It was great. I think one out of every 10 of these should be about food and health, because as much as I hate it, it's a large part of the big conspiracy. We're getting attacked on all these fronts. And if you think of corporations as like living entities, they eat money, and we got to stop feeding them, you know?
Yeah, and it's all trickery. When you go into a grocery store, you're buying the box. You're buying this cartoon drawing. It's flashy colors, and the lettering is really cool. And they got some kind of image on there. Or when you're buying this worst, you know, we're talking about how these animals have these terrible existences and all their pain and suffering seeps into their own body fat, which then they sell as, you know, their meat. But when it's packaged in the store, it has this little, you know, clear plastic, and then it's got a little picture of a farm, and you yes. feel like, hey, you know, Hillshire, that's a farm somewhere. You know, this is pretty sweet. And you are sold on the picture, and you're not really thinking about what's inside the box. So I was a marketing major, and I was drinking soda and eating meat and having a terrible diet, and I just thought all that shit was sweet, and then I decided to change it.
And would you say do you think you've had real effects?
I feel like, and here's the big thing, and we didn't really get into this in this interview too much, but it changed my role in society. You know, now I'm a bit of a contrarian. I'm a vegetarian. Oh, I can't go to every restaurant. It's kind of a pain in the ass sometimes. But with that is a certain, like, role or responsibility. Like, I feel different. Like, I feel like, you know, not necessarily wiser, like, oh, look at you idiots. You're all going to eat yourself to death. But I feel like an elder in a certain way. Like, now I can be a proper mentor for others because I've implemented the proper changes in my own life.
That's a good attitude.
And so it's not, you know, I'm helping a whole tribe here and not just myself. And for those reasons, I think it's legitimate, but definitely farming is fun. Like, gardening is actually fun. It's sometimes can be crazy when you plant the actual seed and watch it grow all the way. You gotta
farming can be fun, believe me. But, you know, people, if you aren't knuckling down on your diet already, and I know a lot of you aren't because people are complaining that I don't sell 2X and 3X shirts at Conspiracies, you really should stop complaining to me and get that body right. And I should be getting 2Xs soon anyway, but that's not the point. Don't give money to companies that are laughing while they poison you. Don't be a weak bitch. We can do this together starting today. No more soda, no more fries. Keep them if you want, but you're going to get full of salad and you're not going to have room for this other stuff. I guess that's the approach that James would make. But don't wait till you have diabetes and a clogged up heart.
Add water. Just drink water, man. I mean, you don't have to personally, but I'm just saying to the audience, water, that's the thing to drink, man. I know it has fluoride in it. I know it has fucking leaked out psychotropic drugs that people flush down the toilet. I know it has everything terrible possible. But, like, you're also a magician, so, like, do a little prayer and say, oh, I purify this water and then drink it. It's legit. I'm not kidding.
All right, people, you get it. We shouldn't be preaching anyway, although this is the Sabbath. But thanks for listening. Please rate, review, like, retweet, and share the show. Again, it's the currency of the internet, and I appreciate that currency. It's the only way people find out about us, and it's growing every day. So if you want to be that guy who says, hey, I was listening to them when they were still on episode 44, now's your chance to put that on the record. So I love you guys. Check out conspiracies.net for some amazing, classy and fashionable conspiracy themed t-shirts. Kyle, by the way, he runs the Conspiracies Facebook page, which is pretty much just funny and truthful memes and pictures. Always fun to have it in your news feed amongst the weather updates and the sports boners. But I guess we'll see you next Sunday if all goes well with Jacques Fresco from the Venus Project. Take some advice from Scar and be prepared for that, people. Again, thanks to James Colquhoun for dropping knowledge on us. I'm Greg Carlwood, he's Kyle Furnaville, and this is not the greatest show in the world, this is just a tribute.
Life is not a spark in space, an episode of Will and Grace. Controversial yet mundane, Deborah's messing with your brain. Even Scientologists know there's more to all of this. Search the ruins for trapdoors, wonder what you're put here for. Simple as a hint of gas, climbing nostrils as you pass. Making Harvard graduates feel childish when they laugh at it. Climb the rungs to kingdom come, sour patch to acid. Are you opposed to having fun? You clench the world between your buns. You could do better, you could do better. You could be the greatest man in the world. You could do better, you could do better. You could be the greatest man in the world. Your life is always the post of something else. Where is the present in the way that you present yourself? And it's disgusting how little that you try. The existential equivalent of pink eye. Drink alone and watch TV. You're expecting harmonies to tap your tune with silver spoons. Anthem of impending doom. Guiding Satan's steady hand. Forcing Beatles to disband. It's ego freaks and drama queens. The young at heart know what I mean. You could do better, you could do better. You could be the greatest man in the world. You could do better, you could do better. You could be the greatest man in the world. You could do better, better. fraud. Thank God and learn to keep your shirt on. You could do better, you could do better. You could be the greatest man in the world. You burn so brightly. You burn so brightly in the dark.
The greatest man in the world.